Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're recording.
Woohoo! Yay. Hi, everyone.
Welcome to Two Black Girls, One Wasian Guy, and One Rose.
Where two black-ass girls and one Wasian guy invade the whitest show on earth,
Bachelor in Paradise. Paradise.
I'm Natasha.
I'm Justine.
And I'm John.
Yay! We're so excited, everybody. We have John Graham, a.k.a. hashtag Venmo John, on the line.
And we're so excited to talk to John, particularly because his social media presence is really saturated with positive messaging around representation. Got some dad jokes in there, got some one-liners. And he is not sponsored by corny ads. You're not going to see any teeth whitening, no FabFitFun boxes, none of it. And it just shows how seriously, John, you've taken this platform that you've been given, and we want to thank you for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, thank you guys for having me on the podcast. I'm super excited, and I'm happy we can get to some pretty interesting conversation.
Yes. Yeah. So we were talking offline with John quickly that we have even some mutual friends. He had a dorm mate who we went to high school with. Small world. Love it.
Mm-hmm. Very small world.
Mm-hmm. One thing we want to ask, so everyone obviously refers to you as Venmo John. How do you feel about this name? You no longer work at Venmo. We know you're one of the first employees there, but like this whole hashtag Venmo John, like what's your take on this?
Yeah, at first I was a little quiet about it and reserved, and I think because when you hear about someone that's been early at a tech company, you start to draw impressions about how much money they might have or how financially stable that might be. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to meet people without those connotations coming behind me. And so I kind of didn't talk about it much on Bachelorette at all. Mm-hmm. And if you talk to any of the guys, probably most of them didn't know from me. They probably found out through someone else.
Mm-hmm.
But then on Paradise, I'm like, I realized that Venmo's a big part of my life. I spent several years working there, and because I was one of the first employees there, I got to see Venmo go from next to nothing with just a handful of people to something that a bunch more people use today. So mm-hmm. I'm pretty proud and excited about my work at Venmo, and I would want my partner in the future to be excited about that too. So if that's something that I am hiding from people,
mm-hmm.
then I'm not really opening up and doing myself the like full service that I should be to getting to know people. So
mm-hmm.
I embrace it. You know, if people want to call me that, then I'm totally fine with it.
Yeah.
I usually go by John, but people come up to me and yell like, "Are you Venmo John?" I've got no problems with it.
Nice. Yeah, it's a big part of your life, so you might as well wear it with pride. Why not? How did the, so we live in New York City, so we've obviously
seen you all over.
We see you everywhere. These Venmo ads, how did that come about?
Yeah, so years ago, we ran an ad campaign that was similar to the current Venmo ad campaign in the subways, but that one was called Lucas Uses Venmo, and one of our coworkers named Lucas, an Asian guy, we took photos of him looking very stoic, and we had random simple sentences plastered in the subways. Like, Lucas takes the stairs, Lucas eats sushi, Lucas likes magic, Lucas uses Venmo. And the whole idea was, hey, if Lucas is so normal and using Venmo, I should use Venmo too. And so this new Venmo campaign that they ran now was sort of a callback to what they did in the past with a little bit more exposure with someone that people have seen before on TV.
Yes. Very smart.
Yeah. Oh,
nice. I like it.
Yeah, pretty cool.
So where are you calling us from?
I currently live in San Francisco. So I've been here for like 3 years or so. After I left Venmo, I joined a new startup out here in San Francisco, and I packed up my stuff from New York and I moved to San Francisco.
Oh, cool. Are you from New York originally?
I'm not from New York. I actually grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. And I'd say that was like one of the whitest neighborhoods that I could have grown up in. And as one of the few non-white people, I always felt like there was a little bit of interesting dynamic or something that just seemed slightly different. People very rarely said things, but it just felt different. And then I went to college in New York, and I lived in New York for several years. That's when I was working at Venmo. And then I came to San Francisco after that.
Okay. Well, me and Justine know all about white spaces.
We do. Us private school girls, we know.
Also from...
I went to a private school, too, actually.
You did?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. We got lots to talk about here. All right. So with, you know, you were on The Bachelorette, Bachelor in Paradise, you know, you've been watching yourself on TV. How were you watching the seasons? Were you doing watch parties? Like, how were you watching every week?
I think for the initial episode for Bachelorette and the initial episode for Paradise, I watched with some friends at their houses or apartments. I don't have cable TV, and I only have Netflix and Hulu. So after we watched the first episode, I would just watch on my own, but I'd have to wait for the next day when it was available on Hulu to actually watch the episode. So I didn't even get a chance to finish watching them all. I watched what I could.
Wow.
Damn, John, really not giving a fuck.
Not at all.
He was extremely entertaining.
Yeah, he's like, I'll get around to it one day.
Yeah, whenever.
Whatever. Yeah, whenever we've had a guest on the show, we love to dig into the casting process because Justine and I are especially fascinated by the complete and utter lack of diversity, racial diversity on the show. And we're really trying to make sense of all of it. So we're definitely going to dig into that a little bit.
Sure, let's go there.
Great. So before we talk about your casting specifically, what was your relationship to the franchise before you were on the show?
I hadn't seen that many episodes of the show before. I hadn't seen a single episode of Paradise, but I had an ex-girlfriend in the past that was into the show, so I knew the premise. I'd seen a few episodes of probably like some subset of guys that are out there that think the show's a little contrived and silly, and I don't get it, and I don't know why I would watch it, but I was intrigued by the drama. I did think it was entertaining, and so I guess kind of the steps that led me to applying was in 2017, I got out of a relationship, and it was short, but I was pretty into it. So when it ended in early 2017, I was pretty bummed out for a while, and I like really took time off of dating to like focus on myself. And I joined a volleyball league, and I bought a guitar, and I started volunteering. So, like, things that I wanted to be doing for myself, not focus on dating. And then by the end of 2017, my friends were like, all right, you should definitely get yourself out there again. And two of my friends, they're married, they love the show. And they're like, here's the steps to apply, here's what you have to do. And they kept pinging me every week to apply. So eventually I wrote, I think my application process probably mimics a number of guys, but I just applied online. I don't think there's any casting in San Francisco that I know of. But I got to write an essay and send in photos and do a video interview. and I actually mailed in my application. So I put it on like a USB stick with the photos and the video and printed out my essay and put it all in like a little package and mailed it.
Wow.
And then, so that was early 2018. And then a few days later, or maybe a week later, I was smart enough to forget my email address in my application.
Oh my God.
So they had to like comment on like an Instagram post or something to notify me tell me to email a certain person. And then through there, I went to LA for interviews and eventually got an offer to be on the show. And we started filming shortly after. So my start to finish application time was pretty quick.
Yeah.
And I think depending on when you apply, it can be like more drawn out or it can be pretty rapid.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Wow. So you did all the steps, like sent in the tapes, mailed an envelope, like the whole thing. Wow.
Yeah. I don't know of any other way to apply. I assume that everyone had to do that, but I don't know.
Yeah, we've heard a mixed bag.
Yeah, like the LA people obviously did in person casting.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people were noticed on the street.
Yeah.
Yeah, some people were picked up on the street, or someone had a coworker whose friend was a producer, like all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You did the whole old school route. Love it.
But I do remember in the application process, I was cognizant that I'm Asian and probably different than most of the applicants that apply.
Mm-hmm.
And I was concerned because in my head, and I told the casting agents this, and I told some of the producers, in my head, my perception is that the people that go far and the people that get on and the people that win are homecoming kings that you see from the Midwest, that, you know, played football and are incredibly good looking. And they're all like, you know, 6'5" and really athletic.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't fit that mold quite as much, like, and so I told them that, and they're like no, like, that's not necessarily what we're looking for. What they want is a diverse batch of folks, but, you know, hopefully with applicants like you, we're going to get more of those applicants now, because the truth is, my understanding is that they don't get many applicants of color, and they don't get many applicants of like Asian or minority descent. Generally, like, what you see is on TV are the types of people that apply. So they can only pull from such a small pool from the minority groups. So it's actually harder probably for them to like hit diversity goals, if that's even you know, on their radar. It never came up in my application process unless I explicitly talked about it.
So yeah, that's been our assessment from like talking with people, is that they really just don't get that many people of color to apply.
Yeah.
That being said, though, we've also heard that they go out and seek people. If they really want to find, like, people of color, they have casting people that go out and search out people. I think DeMario or somebody was found in, like, a Chipotle.
Yeah.
So if it's really up to them, they can do it.
I heard Chris Don was found similarly. Maybe his friend referred him, or someone saw him just in LA and through that. And Chris Don's a black guy, so his application process might have been slightly different too.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, we were doing some digging online. So in terms of just like the casting, the historic casting of Asian men on The Bachelorette, we had season 2, Andy Chang. He went home night 1. And then they didn't have another Asian male until season 12 with JoJo. Jonathan Hamilton also went home night 1. And then on Rachel's season, we had 2, Blake Kilpak, who was the U.S. Marine that, like, everyone was obsessed with. Yeah. And Mohit Segal, who also went home night 1. So I would say mass media, I mean, outside of The Bachelor, mass media historically has just erased Asian men from the romantic view, you know what I mean? And so The Bachelorette is pretty much just a part of that. Why, in your opinion, has The Bachelor, a franchise about romance that has such a nationwide platform, why do you think they followed suit with this?
Well, change like this, from what I've seen, doesn't happen overnight. And it's a long process. And it's not just for any sort of culture or ethnicity. It's probably anybody, any group that is non-white. And it takes time to, like, build out those diversity numbers, and it takes time to represent folks that are not historically represented. And like a clear example that I see, when you look at someone who was an absolutely phenomenal bachelorette, like Rachel, and she's a minority, and just looking at a very broad like number of followers on Instagram, hers is very different than some of the other white bachelorettes.
Right.
And it's not because she was a bad bachelorette. Like, she was amazing. And if you talk to anybody that knows her, she was absolutely phenomenal. And she truly ran the show. And, like, people really love her. The difference is that the rest of America sees differently, just on, like, appearances. And that's not something that changes overnight. It takes a lot of time. So so as long as there, you know, there's continued representation, like with Asians specifically, I think, like, with the movie Crazy Rich Asians, which I've talked about and I love, and with you seeing more Asian folks in the media and now on Bachelorette and on Bachelor in Paradise, it's really cool to see. And you know, there's baby steps each way, but, like, we're getting there. And it's just cool to see.
Yeah. Agreed.
Definitely. Definitely agreed. And if we just talk about the year 2018, right, it started, we would say, with you on The Bachelorette, then Crazy Rich Asians. We had Awkwafina hosting SNL, To All the Boys I Loved Before. We had Asian Bae on Insecure. We had Fresh Off the Boat is in its fifth season on ABC. And we can go on and on just for 2018 representation alone. But it seems like for this year, compared to last year, we've gone from zero to 100. Like, as much as it is a gradual process to, like, get diversity into the behind-the-scenes stuff, for us as consumers, it seems like it's gone from no Asian representation to Asian representation all over the place. So our cynical view of that is that some big executives caught on to the fact that it sells, that Asian representation is selling. So what is your take on kind of our view on that?
I've never heard in person about any sort of, you know, riding the Asian hype train for 2018. Maybe, like, maybe those are conversations that the higher ups have. It never came out in any sort of discussions with me. But when I look back, growing up as a kid, like, you know, going back to what I saw were the homecoming kings that were strikingly good looking and muscular. You never saw an Asian guy like that, and to see folks like that represented in the media in such a positive light as the leading male or the leading female of minority descent. That's just such an uplifting thing to see. So much so that Asian guys chase me down the street now and have, like, called after me just to say that they saw me on the show and thought it was awesome because I'm Asian, or that's because so nice. I have the same major as them, or because I work at a tech company like they do.
Wow.
And it was like that's the type of representation to me that matters. When people feel so much more proud of their background and so much more, like valued and understood just because they've seen somebody that they, like, they don't even know in person.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is so heartwarming.
It is. And that's literally so nice.
Why we
it really
always
is. Like, I was with my friends and I was like, guys, I have to take a photo with Patrick. He's the man. Look at him. So I, like, stopped to say hi. Yeah.
Wow. Aww.
Yeah. Representation is so crucial for those moments in particular.
Yeah.
Where the little girl or just, like, the random guy in the street is just so happy to see someone who looks like him.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Because I felt that way growing up, and I never saw people, like, role models that I could look to in the media that look like me.
Yep.
And so, you know, if they feel that way, then heck yeah, I'm happy to sit down and chat with them and take photos with them.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Nice.
Awesome. Yeah.
So just moving into that, a good segue. According to a huge study done by OkCupid in 2014, Black women and Asian men were deemed the least desirable among online daters. But in the last 4 or 5 years, Black women have been celebrated in the media and definitely seen as desirable. And as we said before, this year, Asian men have been having a similar buildup. Henry Golding in Crazy Rich Asians and A Simple Favor is definitely a sex symbol now. And as Insecure fans, we were dying over Asian Bay, Alexander Hodge. We were definitely swooning over him. So what are you making of this movement of the hot Asian male that you're definitely a part of?
As a half Asian male myself, I think that's awesome, especially, you know, as someone who didn't grow up with that stigma around me. And another thing too, like, I know I'm gonna have kids that have some sort of like Asian looking features, mm-hmm. and I want them to feel like they have role models growing up. And I see young Asian kids today, or young kids of minority today, that that might face similar challenges or just insecurity issues, and I want them to feel like they have role models. And I've had parents reach out to me and say that they will also have half Asian children, and that they are excited to see that this change is happening because they know that their kids are going to have similar experiences when they grow up. And so hearing those types of stories is is like exciting when you know that there's like, I can be part of that catalyst for change.
Yeah, it's a movement.
Awesome. Yeah,
just gotta hop on.
Slowly but surely, we get there.
Yeah, slowly but surely, we're trudging along. Wow. So we want to segue. We're gonna, you know, dig into Becca's season a little bit. We want to backtrack into your datingness, dating history a bit.
Let's do it.
So you're unarguably probably one of the most quote unquote eligible bachelors who've been on The Bachelorette. Besides being good looking and witty, obviously very well spoken, you know, very successful in your personal and professional life. That being said, one, are you single? And two, why are you single? What is your take on this? Walk us through this.
Yeah, I'm single right now. And I think coming back from the show, it just made me, it made me a little more judicious about the people that I want to spend my time with, and it made me more, I guess, suspicious of why people want to hang out with me. Is it, do they like the idea of hanging out with me, or do they actually like me? And this came from like a very specific example I'm thinking of. I met up with someone who, like, we got connected through social media, and like on paper would have been awesome and perfect, and you know, like we're both enjoy running and lots of outdoor stuff, and in the Bay Area, and like things seem really awesome, but like in person it was fine, it was good, but we go to pay and like there was numerous opportunities to like pay for things like a drink or an activity or whatever, and she's just stood there, like didn't say anything, didn't even look at me, didn't even remember, and I stood there too, like I'm always gonna pay.
Yeah,
I want to be the gentleman. It gives me pride to be able to like take care of somebody, and that's the kind of guy I want to be when I and I'm with my partner. But if you don't even like motion your hand into your pocket, or if you don't be like, hey, like why, like can I get this round or whatever, and you, instead you just stand there all like absent-mindedly and don't even like like do the dance with me. If you don't do the dance with me, then it starts to miss. I like am suspicious of what you want. So that sort of left like a sour taste in my mouth, and since then I've been pretty hands off on like trying to go on like really formal dates and trying to like, I'm not on any dating apps. I like, since the show, I've been mostly focused on like being heads down at work and like spending time with my friends. So like that's kind of my bread and butter at the moment, but like I am certainly open to meeting Mrs. Wright. I know she's out there, but like I feel like I need a little bit of built up trust with somebody before I'm gonna really want to like have feelings for them or want to date them.
Definitely. Jeez, ladies, you have to at least do the gesture,
at least do the reach.
At least the reach,
or be like, oh my god, are you sure?
Right.
Something. It's
or
the gesture,
like can I get next round or something,
right?
Whatever it is, like I'm gonna pay, so it's fine, but like
the offer,
like you know how to do it.
Yes, we know. We are well versed in the gesture. So yeah, I can imagine now that, you know, you're more well-known, you're more on a national platform, Venmo is, like, attached to your name now, that it's definitely a little bit more difficult. What's dating like in the Bay Area? Seeing that it's a more male-dominated city, also tech is a very male-dominated industry. I guess, what's the dating landscape just in general over there?
Yeah. Well, before the show, I was using dating apps, and my experience was you get what you like, take out what you put in. And so the amount of time that I invest in, you know, selecting the right photos, writing a good bio, messaging people, planning a date, confirming the date the day of, then going to meet them, like, I could eventually get to the point where I would, like, go on a date with somebody, but it's really time-consuming, and you have to get through a lot of cruft to eventually meet cool people.
Right.
And I don't know if that's specific to San Francisco, but that was my experience in San Francisco before I went on the show.
It's the same over here. I'll just say that. New York is the same. You put in a lot of effort to maybe potentially get on a date, but it's a lot of buildup to...
Yeah. And people I've found are not always clear about what they want, or they may not even know what they want. So if they want something casual and fleeting, or if they want to be in a committed relationship, is like... I don't care. Like, both are fine as long as you're respectful and honest about it. But I think people do a really poor job of communicating that, especially up front when you're, like, afraid of scaring somebody or afraid of coming on too strong.
Right.
So I've always, especially more recently, found that it's better to be up front about what you want and how you feel.
Yeah, definitely. We talked about it on our last episode, just, like, clearing motives and being very upfront as to what your intentions are, because on online dating,
it's also like you can make you might be polarizing in that people are really going to like you or people are going to hate you for being that upfront.
Yeah, that's true.
In the same way that on social media, people love you or hate you. You want to be polarizing because the people that love you are your, like, diehard big fans, and they're not going to leave you. And if they hate you, they're not going to follow you anyway. So it's the same thing with people. If you're yourself and you're upfront and honest, at least they can decide whether or not they want to spend more time with you because they know what you want.
Always be
clear.
Yes. Yeah. I said last week, I said online dating feels like a bunch of people just wasting each other's time. If we all were just clear on our profiles, it would be a lot easier and we'd go on more dates.
Are you DTD or DTF?
Yes.
Right.
Exactly. Let's be upfront, please.
So, wait, you've never considered going on Raya? Have you heard about Raya?
Oh, yeah. You can get on Raya now, John.
Yeah.
I have heard of Raya. I don't know if I have any... I'm sure I have friends on Raya. I've never talked to them about it. So, I don't know. I've never been referred or I've never had that conversation. But I thought you had to be referred by someone who's on Raya. And I don't know anybody on Raya.
Yeah.
But you could email somebody from Raya. You would get in.
It's very dubious. I know they look at, like, social media influence. So, if you have a certain number of followers or something. But I don't know if you still need an invite code or something. I don't know.
Your guess is as good as mine. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you investigate, let us know and send me an invite. I have like 900 followers on Instagram. I'm nowhere near Raya material.
Okay, so let's dig into Becca's season. Your time on Becca's season was unfortunately short-lived, but we just want to know, what was your one-on-one time with Becca like? Did you see, like, sparks there with her?
With Becca, I felt like she was one of the nicest people I've ever met. So sweet. She really cares about getting to know people. But I didn't feel like we had chemistry. And a conversation was easy and was great, but I wasn't like, man, this is my girl. Like, I saw the sparks flying with other guys. And, you know, I tried it at first, and we didn't get there. And, like, it's no harm, no foul. Like, I'm still friends with Garrett and Becca, and I'm so, when I see them together, I see how happy they are together, And like, I didn't have that with her, so not at all jealous or upset about it. I'm like so happy for them.
Good. Nice. Yeah. Nice. So as far as the house goes, like, who are you closest to in the house?
Yeah, I at the house, I definitely hung out with Garrett a bunch. I hung out with Kristen.
Mm-hmm.
I hung out with Leo. I hung out with Blake and Colton. So those are some of the guys that I was closer with.
Okay, yeah, a lot of friends.
Yeah,
good.
Mm-hmm.
So, Justine and I have dug into this into our podcast quite a bit. Becca's season of just some problematic men among the cast. We had Lincoln, who was a convicted sexual offender. Leo had some sexual harassment accusations come out, and he also just looked like a full-on dick on Paradise.
Yeah.
And Jordan, I mean, Jordan, it's a bit split. I would say, in my opinion, he seemed very self-absorbed on the season. He's now kind of had a whole nother, like, storyline arc with Paradise and this whole Jenna scandal. And then Garrett, who we've definitely not shied away with how we feel about his whole social media stuff. I'm just curious, like, what was the energy like in the house among the guys?
I mean, I would say with the guys, we were all pretty tight. There were maybe a few people that we were not fond of. And other than that, like, we were buddies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we would just hang out. And, like, in the later weeks, most people didn't want to know what was going on the one-on-one dates. Mm-hmm. I, on the other hand, was always curious. I was like, oh, what'd you guys do? How did it go down? Like, I didn't have feelings for Becca like that. But some of the other guys were like, oh, I don't want to hear about it. Just, like, do your thing. Let's be homies, though.
Mm-hmm.
And with the exception of maybe a couple guys, like, we were all, I would say, like, fairly tight. Maybe some guys closer than others, but we were all buddies, I'd say.
Okay. And so after, I guess what makes it interesting is, like, after all these different scandals with Lincoln and Leo and Garrett and all this have been revealed, how did the dynamic around all you guys, I guess, post show, like, did they shift? Has anyone even talked to Lincoln? Like, what's happened?
I haven't really spoken to Lincoln much after the show. I think we texted a couple times right after I got back from filming, but since then, not so much. With Garrett, I still talk to him more regularly. I just got dinner with him, like, on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody else? Who else did you mention?
Yeah, I guess just if there was a dynamic shift after, like, it just seems like one week there was, like, the Lincoln scandal,
yeah,
then the Leo scandal, then the Garrett scandal. Like, was there a shift among you guys in terms of your dynamics?
I would say probably not. I mean, maybe Lincoln was one of the guys that in the house we weren't too fond of because he's a very fast talker who talks in circles and says the same thing over and over again, and it just got kind of bland. So I wouldn't say that any of us were really tight with him before, during, or after the show. So it's probably been pretty consistent. Like, if we were friends with him on the show, we're still friends with him now. I still consider myself friends with Leo, and, you know, we catch up from time to time. And even though, you know, he didn't have to make the best choices on Paradise, I know he's still a good guy deep down. He just made some poor decisions.
Okay.
Gotcha. Now, with Becca and Garrett, so Becca was someone who, going into being the Bachelorette, she was very vocal about being very political and being, you know, liberal, big Hillary fan, all that jazz. And she ends up choosing or being with Garrett, whose social media activity kind of painted a different picture. And in the end, you know, we were a little perplexed by her choice until we kind of just saw it as, you know, this is a woman, a white woman, who is able to use her white privilege to kind of bypass maybe viewing someone's belief systems in a way that, as a woman of color, I wouldn't be able to look past some of the things that I saw from his social media. It would just be a deal breaker.
I mean, I never saw race being, like, an issue or even a topic that people talked about on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I assume it didn't come up with Becca and Garrett in their personal conversations, but I don't know what they talked about behind closed doors.
Right.
I will say, if you talk to Garrett, he is one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet.
Mm-hmm.
And it stinks to see, like yes, he did make some poor decisions on social media back in the day, and you know he's very sorry about that, and he stands by his apology. But if you met him in person, he's like a deep down, very genuine, nice guy, and he really cares about the people in his life, and he would never want to hurt a soul. So I understand that people are frustrated and hurt by some of his past social media actions, but you know, from what I've seen with Garrett, he's not that kind of guy, and you know, he's a super loving, genuine, caring guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that. I could totally see that he's a
definitely upstanding guy.
Yeah, and a likable guy.
Yeah, he's super fun, super funny, and very caring with those people that he's close with. So that's the kind of person that Becca fell in love with, not for some mistakes that he made in the past years ago.
Yeah, I guess my personal, I don't want to get too into it because I can go off on a whole tangent, but my personal, I guess, belief around it is I would love to have seen Garrett just kind of own your beliefs. I think it's weird for him to apologize for the likes in a way. You know, don't apologize for your likes. Yeah, give an explanation for, if that's what your belief system is, then just own that and run with it. The apology thing was kind of weird to me. I don't know. But anyways, what we wanted to ask was really, you know, with politics, how does politics for you play into dating? And have you ever dated someone who might have a different belief than you? And how did it work?
I don't think politics really comes up in conversation on like dates that I've been on. And with my friends and inner circle of people that I hang out with, I would say we're all pretty like-minded and being liberal and wanting to treat people with respect. And we do our fair share of like hating on certain political figures, but you know, that's generally in jest and just with our like friends. We don't go into deeply political stuff like in our dating lives, or at least I don't. If there's any plug though that I want to have, it's that people should go vote.
Thank you.
In this upcoming election, so
plug away. That's really important, everybody.
Yep.
You heard it from John. Go vote.
Go vote.
So one thing that we thought was interesting, tying back to social media, is that in the kind of Garrett apology, he said that he never realized the power behind a mindless double tap, and who's to say what. That what anybody likes is truly what they believe. But now both Becca and Garrett have sponsored content on their Instagram pages, and so they can't deny the monetary value of those double taps. So as consumers, how, like, what can we make of all of this when they're like diminishing the value of a double tap but also asking us to double tap?
I don't know. I hadn't thought that far ahead into it. I would like, I think they try to pick brands and sponsors that are meaningful to them and are true to who they are. Mm-hmm. So if you know, if it's something that they want to be sponsored with, and I was actually just talking to Garrett about this, like he has a way bigger social media following than I do. And he barely does any sponsorships because it's just not something that he, you know, cares that much about. And you know, he's an outdoors guy and loves to be active and loves to be with his friends and family, so he'd rather spend his time doing that. So I don't think that like social media is his end game.
Okay.
I think it's really like, it's when you're in that situation and sponsors are offering you a lot of money to post a picture, like who wouldn't do that?
Yeah.
But like, especially while, you know, this might be a shorter window than other people in like media. So, I've never known him as that kind of guy, but social media is a thing that you can monetize on, so I don't blame him for it. Mm-hmm. I would be if I were in his shoes.
Yeah. And he has a job mm-hmm. as well. It's not like his only source of income is this, so. No.
Yeah, he has a lot of experience with medical sales, too.
Oh, that's right. That's yes. right. That's right. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, he actually taught me quite a bit on the show, too, because he had to go through extensive training for it.
Okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, gotta get that money.
Yep.
I guess.
Secure that bag. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, we wanted to shift away from Becca and Garrett. Let's go into Paradise, where you thrived in Paradise, John.
Yeah, well, I came into Paradise with a completely different mindset. Like, on Bachelorette, I was timid, I was shy, and I've never been particularly good in big group scenarios, especially when it's a big group of alpha males. Mm-hmm. They're all huge, like physically huge. and then personality huge too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And on Paradise, I like walked in and I met Chris Harrison again. And I was like, you know, this is a new me. I want to hit the ground running. I want to meet everybody. And I want to see what could potentially be there, because my future Mrs. Graham might be here. Mm-hmm. And so I really made a point mm-hmm. to go sit down and talk with everybody. Nice. And I think, with the exception of maybe a couple people, I did that. Like, I like didn't have intentions, or I didn't have like expectations about where things should go. I just really wanted to sit down and chat with everybody mm-hmm. before I go all guns blazing on one person.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a
great
perfectly way to operate Paradise. Yeah.
Yeah, and there were other folks that didn't put themselves out there and didn't really try to get to know the other women. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it worked out as well for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So you definitely were out here in these streets. Mm-hmm. There's been many think pieces of you and all the women you kissed on Paradise. I would say Justine and I were living. We loved seeing you just living your best life. Other viewers might have been turned off, whatever. We joked on this podcast that we thought you were pimping in Paradise because in college you didn't go to spring break because you were busy doing hackathons and coding in your dorm room. Is this true?
That is mostly true, yes.
Oh my god! I was right!
I did do, I think, a spring break with... It wasn't like the traditional go to Cancun spring break.
Uh-huh.
It was more like we rented a house somewhere with some friends.
Okay.
So you got something.
That's something.
Yeah.
But he was also doing hackathons and coding. I love it.
Yeah. What they don't really tell you on Paradise, you have to sort of figure out for yourself, is that the filming itself is pretty quick. And some of the days you don't have all day, every day to spend time with people and just chit chat. Mm. There's a little bit of structure from time to time. And the whole filming, because it's only several weeks long, you don't have that much time to get to know people.
Right.
So you have to move relationships along slightly faster than usual because there just isn't that much time. Like if Chris and Crystal got engaged after a month, and a lot of people would say that's really fast.
Yeah.
And with some degree of truth, that's true. But like the conversations that you have on Paradise force you to get deep fast.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like dating in reverse, where you mm-hmm. have to get to the deep stuff about a partner before you know their favorite color.
Right.
Because there just isn't that much time.
Yeah.
And so when you move relationships along faster than usual, it can take you to places faster than usual that wouldn't normally happen in like an outside dating environment.
Right. Yeah. How long were you guys filming Paradise?
I don't know the exact timeline, but it was in the realm of weeks.
Okay.
Cool. Like 2-3
like
weeks.
Like a month or so, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely more than 2 or 3 weeks. But
oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Not like 3 months or anything.
Right. Yeah.
So when did they approach you about Bachelor in Paradise?
After I got eliminated from Bachelorette, I think they had mentioned like, oh, there's always Paradise. And, as we start casting for it and thinking about it, we'll contact you. And they probably say that to every
mm-hmm.
cast member.
Yeah.
But, and then several weeks later, they reached out to me about, formal casting.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And so going into Paradise, I believe, I mean, they ask you if there's like certain girls that you're interested in. Who were you hoping to see in Paradise?
So I was excited about meeting CN. She was on Ari's season. I like watched a couple of episodes of Ari's season just to get a feel for who might be there.
Mm-hmm.
But she's, I think she has a boyfriend. She
does, yes.
I like DM'd her and or I emailed her or something.
Yes.
And she's like, oh, I'm not going. I'm like, okay, cool.
Oh my god, we love CN. She's on the podcast twice.
Yeah, we love her.
She seems cool. I don't think I met her in person.
Okay.
And I had messaged Caroline too, but I don't think she saw it.
Okay. Oh. Damn. Mixed up in the DMs. I could totally see CN and John. It's like a little Ivy love match.
Yes! Yes.
Ivy, right. Ivy POC. Columbia. Yeah, Ivy POC love match. Love it.
Well, black women of Bachelor Nation and black women in our inbox were ecstatic to see that you had connections with two black women on the show, Jubilee and Olivia. So what's your experience with dating women outside of your race?
Personally, I had not dated a black woman before.
Oh, before Paradise? Wow.
Yeah, I had not. Mm-hmm. And I have dated white women and Asian women before. Okay.
Gotcha.
Okay. And everyone was really hopeful to see you and Jubilee and that one snippet of a date that we saw. And we got no footage beyond that first date. So what happened with her going home?
Yeah, we had a super fun date. That ziplining adventure was really cool. We had a great time. And when we came back, I was pretty clear with her. I was like, hey, we had a fun date, but like...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Justine, how is your social battery these days?
My God, I am to the brim. I still have time for my yoga practice and reading every night, but I do have a ton of invitations to outdoor happy hours, events. Mm-hmm. This past weekend, I spent with almost all of my best friends at once, and by Sunday, I was completely drained. Mm. What about you?
Yeah, I've been feeling pretty decent. I've been getting a lot of me time, which you know is very important to me.
Uh-huh.
But I definitely know what it's like to spread myself too thin, particularly socially, mm-hmm. especially with the weather getting nicer, wanting to be outside all the time with all my people. Mm-hmm. I get it. I totally get it, friend.
Mm-hmm. It can take some serious reflection to understand what's the right amount of socializing and how do you recharge? Maybe you're like me and you thrive around people, or maybe you're like Natasha and need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
Now, y'all know we are huge advocates of therapy. We talk about it all the time on this podcast. It's been tremendously beneficial throughout various stages of my life, from being young and single and struggling with loneliness. Therapy massively helped me to cope. Dealing with work stress and crippling burnout, therapy really helped me to set boundaries with myself and prioritize my self-care as well.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/2BG1R today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/2BG1R.
I still haven't met everybody. I was still pretty early on on Paradise, and so I was still like getting to know everybody. I'm also like, I'm not a jealous type, and I wouldn't want someone to, I wouldn't want to ever feel like restricted, like I can't talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her that too. Mm-hmm. And, I think over time I sort of felt like, with our time back on the beach and still getting to know people, mm-hmm. I thought that Jubilee and I would be better as friends. Mm. And so I had given her a rose, and then so it was like the it switches. So now is her week, the mm-hmm. women's week, to give roses out. And I told her that I think we're better as friends. And I don't think she took that well. And mm. she didn't want to meet anybody else or spend time with any other men on the beach. So she left. Like she had the power of the rose that week. So she was definitely safe, but she chose to leave instead.
Mm. Oh, wow. Okay.
Right, yeah.
Damn.
Okay. And her sprung.
Yeah. She was real. Sounds like she was sold on you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of hard when you just got there and you still kind of want to, like, explore.
Yeah,
and
meet people.
Yeah. Damn, it's a shame she went home and didn't even try to stick around to see if right. there's anybody else.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you ended up leaving Paradise with Olivia. To see, you know, how you guys are going to explore your relationship after the show. On the reunion, she was coming for your neck. What happened with Olivia?
I was a little surprised by that.
Yeah.
We had, she came in towards the very end of Paradise. So we didn't have that many days to get to know each other.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a really fun day together, and hanging out there was really fun. And then I went on a group date, and then she went on a date as well. So of the time that we were together, two of those days, we didn't really get to hang out.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't spend that much time together because it was towards like late in the process. And, I didn't feel ready to take her to a fantasy suite. Like we weren't there yet. And I told her that when it was the last day when we were leaving Paradise that like I'm still trying to get to know you. Let's not go there. Mm-hmm. And she was super relieved to hear that because we were on the same page there. But mm-hmm. like I've enjoyed getting to know her. Like let's like see what happens in the real world. So
right.
the hard part is that she lives in Chicago and I live in San Francisco. In the beginning, we were did a great job of like keeping in touch and you know calling and texting a few times a week.
Mm-hmm.
But and. Over time, it sort of like dissipated. Like work gets busy, life gets busy. I visited her in Chicago. We had a great time.
Oh, okay.
And then I think we like hadn't spoken for a few weeks, and I mm-hmm. called her up and I said, I think we're better as friends.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. It's you know a bummer that we didn't get a chance to spend that much time together, and we're really far apart geographically.
Mm-hmm.
Like logistically, it's just hard to make this work.
Yeah,
and she was very understanding. And mm-hmm. then I'm surprised that she like I felt like we were on the same page because we really hadn't been speaking much at all, like once every few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt a little sort of just taken aback by the fact that she's blaming me mm-hmm. or getting frustrated at me for not chatting much because we weren't chatting anyway
mm.
that much. Mm-hmm. So, I still keep in touch with all of my other friends. So, mm-hmm. I don't know why why that came up.
Yeah, she was salty.
Yeah.
But, yeah, distance is a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Long
distance sucks. Yeah. I've never done a long distance relationship before. So,
after
knowing someone for a few days, it'd be a tough sell to get me to long distance date somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot to ask.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Yikes. So Olivia, I mean, she a little bit implied that maybe you and Chelsea had something going on. And then if I remember correctly, I feel like you said that at some point on Paradise that Chelsea's ex was Asian. So you were going to try and maybe slide on in there. Did anything go down with Chelsea? What's the status with Chelsea? We love Chelsea. We're huge Chelsea fans on this podcast.
Oh, yeah. Chelsea and I are still really good friends. Mm-hmm. Like, we still talk from time to time, just like I still talk with Angela or Chris or Bibby or other friends of mine from the show.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen Chelsea or Angela or Chris out of the context of the show. I don't know where rumors started about me dating someone from the show, but I'm not. I never was. So I think on the reunion, I was more just like, I'm sorry you feel that way, but like,
yeah,
it's not true. So, okay.
Yeah. I thought you handled it very fine.
Yeah, actually, pretty well.
Yeah, it was more like
because I didn't have anything to add. I'm sorry to feel that way because it's not true.
Yeah, that was the inkling that we got, that she was trying to go there, and you were like, "There's nothing to go there for."
Yeah,
so.
Right.
Yeah.
Were there any other women in Paradise that you wish you had gotten a chance to know better?
I mean, I always thought Astrid was super cool, but she dated Kevin really early on.
Really, yeah.
No, I don't feel like I had any missed connections.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you played Paradise well. You got to know everybody. Yeah, that's exactly what you're supposed to do.
I really tried to get to know everybody, and it did a good job.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, awesome. Definitely. So, Jenna and Jordan, this whole scandal has been drawn out for so many weeks, so long, probably longer than you were filming. And it's no secret that people go on this show for fame, Instagram followers, money, and just no goal of going for love. And this whole scandal has been so messy, and it's just hard to pick a side with Jenna and Jordan because we feel like, as viewers, both of them came on with dubious intentions. So how does the show keep its integrity with the growing power of influencer fame?
Something that I've always thought is that people come for the drama, but they stay for the love.
Aww.
So if like what's entertaining is to see, you know, sleeping through drama, or to see people bickering, or to see Jordan throwing a stuffed animal in the ocean. But that's not the memorable moment that people bring, that ABC brings couples back for. What they bring couples back for, and what people feel drawn to, is from years ago, you can recall that, you know, the couple from, like, Jordan and JoJo from several years ago are a couple that's still together and that people still talk about today. And those are the most successful couples and successful relationships that ABC has from the show, are ones that are still together and that they can build storylines around. And people like to hear successful love stories because it makes them feel good. So the integrity they have is the same motivation that users have, which is to like see true love and to see it succeed. So even though people still want drama, and they definitely want their fair share of drama to air, they also need relationships to be successful in order for the show to keep running. So the integrity is there because it needs to be.
That's a good point. Yeah,
it's true.
I mean, they're always going to, seems like they're always going to have now like a sprinkling of these, you know, kind of Instagram, I don't even know, like people who are chasing the followers and stuff, but they know that they can't create a show on that.
Right.
Because no one's going to watch that. People are tuning in for the love, as you said.
So. Right, yeah, they come for the drama, they stay for the love.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. Awesome.
Dang, you should copyright that.
They can take that, I don't need it.
Sure, I'll take it. Copyright Natasha.
Let's talk about the future of the franchise. When we had Rachel Lindsay on, she told us they'll have to integrate social media into the show somehow in order for it to stay afloat, because so many of the scandals have erupted from social media. And we love this idea and think it's definitely necessary. But do you have any ideas as a programmer and a computer scientist?
How to integrate social media or anything like that into the show?
My perspective was more from a consumer and from a user of social media products. When I see the show now and I see other cast members, we are all ambassadors for ABC and for the show. Like, it's fun for us to like see our engagement go up, and it's exciting to see like our friends go off and do cool things. And we talk about the show, we talk about ABC, and all press is good press for the show. So they, like, the more that people end up becoming, you know, low-level celebrities from the show, that's only good for ABC, is my guess. It's like, are they going to integrate the show, like, into more social media? I don't know, maybe. Probably, like, I'm sure it's inevitable, but, like, it's already happening because the contestants enjoy it. Like, they don't really even give us pictures to share. It's just like, you know, sometimes the producers will pull out their phone and take a photo, and maybe we'll be able to share that if we can get a hold of the producers because they're super busy at work. But like, they're not like getting photos for us to promote the show. Like, we do that because we enjoy it.
Right.
I think that's the future of the franchise, is somehow integrating the social media, really banking on the contestants of the show to kind of carry it through. And somehow, I feel like it's hard to say where Instagram's going to grow.
I'm sure there's ways they can integrate with Instagram TV, with Facebook Live, and, you know, with live tweeting is already a thing for the episodes as they air, but there's always going to be a new fun platform for people to bank on. And as long as the contestants are doing it, then ABC doesn't have to actively do that as much, and they can instead focus on the content that they're creating for the show.
Oh, I'm excited to see what the future holds for this franchise.
Me too.
So this has nothing to do with The Bachelor, but I have to ask this question.
Great, fire it up.
The listeners know that I'm obsessed with Myers-Briggs. I said on the last episode I was going to try and figure out your type. Do you know your MBTI type?
Yes.
Okay, don't say it. Do you know it, though?
Okay, I have this saved on, like, a tab in my phone.
Oh, my God, me too?
Yes, okay. Yes.
My guess... Damn, now I'm wavering now that I've talked
to
you.
Right? Yeah.
I'm going to guess... ESTJ or ISTJ. Fuck.
Okay, do you want to know?
Yes.
Okay, so you're close. I'm ESFP.
ESFP.
Oh, you were close.
ESF. So my other, Justine can verify this, my other guess I had written down secondary was ESTP. But
super close. What is the F and T, the difference between those?
F and T is feeling versus thinking. It's like how you make decisions, whether you mostly go with your, like, how you feel and your emotions, or are you more, like, logical in your head and kind of weigh out all the options thinking.
Yeah, I would think that I'm more of a analytical thinker, but I'm pretty emotional, so maybe not.
Yeah, I was going with the T. I was being very stereotypical with the programmer.
Yeah, but it seems like from your honesty that you give people, you're definitely F.
I could definitely see F now. Okay. I almost got it, guys. Almost.
You were closer. You had the ES right.
Yeah,
sure.
I had the ES. Yeah, nice.
And we looked at your LinkedIn profile, which is hilarious. You went from Morgan Stanley to some startups to TV, and now you're working in San Fran. What's next for you?
You know, I'm still working at Finn. Believe our mission is awesome. There's a lot of work to be done, and I love my coworkers. So
nice.
I just, you know, enjoying my job. Like, I'll entertain maybe like social media involvement here or there, but I, you know, I spend most of my time at work and with friends and family. So there's no what's next. I don't know if I'll be in San Francisco or New York or wherever in between, but right now I'm in SF and just at work.
Great.
Cool.
Live it up.
Living the dream.
All right. So I think, I mean, that's all the questions we've had for you in terms of digging into Paradise and The Bachelorette. So we're going to get into these listener emails. Are you ready, John?
I am ready. Let's do it.
Great. So on last week's episode, we deep dived into certain themes that we saw come up in Paradise. Those themes were dating with ulterior motives, desperation and love, self-sabotage, do opposites attract, and female friendships. And we have here four emails from listeners seeking some advice. So who do we have?
Okay, so our first email is from Alyssa. And she says, "Hi, Natasha and Justine. I have listened to almost all of your episodes, and I absolutely love the podcast. I've been married to my husband for 6 years. We have a 2-year-old son. Prior to dating my husband, I have a lot of the incidents that relate to your topics on your podcast. I'm Korean and adopted. I was 4 months old when I came here, had no siblings, and was raised by white parents. I went to an upper middle class school district where middle school, like many, were my worst years. High school was better. We had our bigots and our bullies. For example, another Asian student was pushed down the stairs and called a racial slur. But I do have to say, even looking back, for the minuscule amount of minorities, many were popular and fit in. For myself, however, I was never popular in high school, never had boyfriends, etc. I was like an 18-year-old Colton. I blossomed late, and when I got to college, I started going out and meeting a ton of guys. I had never really fell victim into the Asian fetish, quote unquote, prior, so I won't lie when I say it took a moment to catch on. It's honestly men of all races. I had men of color and white men blatantly saying how they were only attracted to Asians and 'where are you from?' all caps letters. But it was usually followed by a compliment, so my ignorant self knew it was wrong but discarded it as okay because it wasn't completely negative. It was only years later I realized how bad it is. To turn this over to you, have either of you been the black friend or an ex which someone tried to use as their I'm not racist card? And then the same question for John. Have you ever been the Asian friend and then the I'm not racist card to any, white friends or exes? Thanks so much, ladies. I love the podcast. Keep it up."
Whew, that's a loaded one.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So I have definitely been the black friend during college. I lived in a dorm room where we had mandatory either 4 or 8 to 8 person rooms. Nobody could live in a single. Oh, so you were guaranteed to live with mostly white people. And the black population was really isolated at my school, and I just wanted to go out and have fun. And I ended up having the best time, but I definitely confessed to my roommates at the time, like, I didn't know if I was going to bond with you guys because I'm the only black one in this room. Mm. But they never made me feel like the token because we all rolled as a crew. Like, they never made me feel like I was different. Even when I got my old little New Haven bae, because, you know, I couldn't get me a old regular one. You know, had to go get one at University of New Haven. we rolled all together. We all went to the Yale parties together. We had a fun time. And I definitely, weirdly, relate to this "where are you from" question. A lot of people think that I am mixed with something and fetishize it. A lot of people think that I'm mixed with some sort of an Indian or
South Asian,
and yeah, a lot of Ethiopian I get, Guyanese I get, and people definitely fetishize it, like, ooh, it's so exotic. And I also took it as a compliment, but also recognized that, like, that's the reason why you're talking to me, which is weird.
Yeah.
I always found it strange. Like, why is it necessary? Mm-hmm. And when I would say that I'm African American, people would be like, "Let me see your parents." I'm like, you guys.
Oh, jeez.
This is unnecessary.
Yeah.
So I definitely have been. I've never been the I'm not racist card. That's wild.
I can chime in real quick.
Go ahead.
I never felt like I was ostracized by my friends for looking different. I felt like in college, especially, my friend group was pretty diverse.
Mm.
And at college, the people around me were pretty diverse. So I definitely never felt like the token Asian guy. And I was never, like, I'm not racist because of John. I think you can play either side with me because you can just say, like, oh, he doesn't count as Asian because he's only half.
Mm.
Or you could also say, like, oh, he doesn't count as white because he's Asian, mm-hmm. half Asian. Mm-hmm. So I've seen it work for both ways, but never in any sort of negative light.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd say, yeah, I've definitely been used as the I'm not racist. Here's my friend Natasha.
Yikes.
Yeah, I think I gave an example in a prior episode where I talked about my friend who would do a lot of like microaggressions around mm-hmm. me, and then the one day she made like an Asian joke and I called her out on it mm-hmm. and she like had a whole fit and said how I made her feel racist. And you know, I think I had let her get along for so long with all these little microaggressions that she felt fine to say whatever she wanted around mm-hmm. me. And so in that essence, she was using me as her like race card friend,
right?
But I mean, yeah, I'd say, as you said before, John, like you grew up in a predominantly white area. Like I too was raised in a predominantly white area. I luckily don't have many like vivid memories of like crazy racist shit happening to me. But I'm sure that there might've been stuff that went down where people felt fine doing it because they're like in their collective conscious. They're like, oh, I'm friends with Natasha though. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, whatever. Now in my life, I say everyone who's in my life now is with purpose. And so I don't feel like I'm friends with anyone as the black friend.
No.
But to Alyssa. I would say, I'm not sure how old. Well, Alyssa's married with kids. Okay, she might be older than me. But I would say, for me, it just took time. And like, yeah, once you get older, you choose your friends more wisely. Yeah. And with more intention, and versus when you're in middle school, you're just kind of all friends for convenience. So I'd say, yeah, I've kind of definitely evolved out of that, and hopefully I'm not in anyone's life now as their quote-unquote black friend, or, you know, I'm not racist friend. And yeah, I think it just took time.
Yeah. All right. So thanks, Alyssa, for your question. Next question is from Ashley. First of all, let me say you ladies are incredible. The world needs many more of you. I can't even say. Thanks, Ashley. I was listening to your episode on desperation. I have a desperation story leading into a question of my own. I was obsessed with this guy for 3 years. We met in a whirlwind romance one summer before he moved away. He was witty AF, and the banter was better than most sex. Will fuck for banter, she put in parentheses.
Jesus.
He always told me we couldn't work because we were abroad in different places, but kept me on the hook and talked to me over Messenger constantly for years. He told me I was his favorite person, that he loved every day he saw me and regretted every day he didn't know me. Real fuckboy shit, and I ate it all up. Finally, he met someone and stayed with her before going abroad again and went long distance with her, making me feel like an utter dumbass. They're still together and have a dog, aka marriage. I've always believed in the he's just not that into you principle, where if he wants you, he'll make it work no matter what. Do you guys think that's true? If so, what about Ashley and Jared? Yours truly, Ashley without the win.
John, I really need to hear your thoughts on this. Is this a thing?
Yeah. I'm 29, and so I don't have that many examples of like these long-winded stories, like drawn-out relationships, mm-hmm. Or drawn-out love stories, for better or for worse. Mm-hmm. It sounds like she's the strongest, like, option B that he's ever had.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if he's always keeping her at arm's length, but won't commit, mm-hmm. if he's, like, always bantering with her and talking to her, but then won't commit, but then meet someone else and will commit so quickly, mm-hmm. then it sounds like he does care for her, and he probably in, like, different timing, or if he were a bit older, he would have committed. But under these circumstances, while he's still like young and able to meet more people, he'd rather do that.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Damn. Sorry, Ashley, but yeah, I kind of have to say the same. So I do kind of believe in the whole he's just not that into you, and that if a guy really likes you, he'll fight to make it work. I disagree with Ashley when she says no matter what.
Yeah.
I don't think that clause for men really makes sense. I think this is my personal opinion, and John, as a man, you can definitely give me the perspective. This is just my take. I personally feel as if men, like maybe pre 35, even 40, really prioritize their career and their professional life and setting up themselves in that capacity more than finding romantic love, which is, I think, one area that men and women really different are different on. A woman will quit her job and move across the country from a man.
Yeah.
Men don't do that in the same rate that we do. And I would say you would, for a man, you would have to be like in the heart of hearts, like his absolute love of his life, and the timing would have to work perfectly with his job for him to give up all this shit for you. I don't know. That's just my cynical view, but that's kind of how I've always viewed men as operating. Mm-hmm. Is that really? Well, go ahead.
Playing devil's advocate only because I have personal, like, I have some family members that are a little bit younger that grew up in the South. Not even that South, but like the Carolinas. They all get married younger in their 20s. Okay. And like, you know, mid to late 20s, they already have kids. So you guys live in New York and I live in San Francisco, like two of the biggest cities in the country. I think it's probably more common where dating apps are more common. And like, unfortunately, what you see, if you're looking for a relationship, you probably see men that are prioritizing their careers first. Because and that probably cities self-select guys that want to do that. And probably the network of folks that you meet going to good affluent schools are going to have people that prioritize their careers first because like they've always been so academically inclined and know what that like they know that they want to prioritize their careers. Also, from a guy's perspective, I want to be that guy that can take care of my family and my partner. And if she chooses not to work, then I want to be able to support her doing that. And I can't set myself up and my family and my partner for success if I haven't secured like a good job that I'm happy and stable with. So I get that, and like I'm certainly there too.
That's true. I think for sure we definitely live in metropolitan cities where I think everyone's just kind of like striving. So yeah, I think definitely my lens would look a lot different than someone in the South. But yeah, I agree that I think men want to be financially secure so they can be able to provide for someone. So I think they do, you know, some men prioritize their professional lives in order to be able to do that. So yeah, I think Ashley, just echoing what John said, that I think this guy is really into you and is connected to you, but perhaps, I mean, this is probably not what you want to hear, but he might not be that into you, and maybe this other woman is feeling that capacity in some way, and that doesn't mean that you're not enough.
Right.
That has nothing to do with one, has nothing to do with the other. He just may feel a stronger connection with that girl, thus the decisions he's made with her. It's not you.
Also, he might not want you to look at him in a bad light. We hear that a lot, of a lot of guys stringing girls along because they just don't want the girl to, like, feel bad about them or feel like they're being mean.
They don't
want to
be the bad guy.
They don't want to be the bad guy ever. And I think, unlike the man we have on the phone right now, they don't choose honesty, which is really unfortunate. But I think the more that you choose honesty, the more that he's just not that into you theory applies. I think if you're playing games with somebody and you're going over Messenger and, like, saying all these romantic things but no, like, pretty empty promises behind them, that theory doesn't really, like, clock out. But I, again, I'm going to say this again. I think I said this last week. We can all learn from Astrid, okay? She put her feelings out there on the table, and it put her in a great place in her relationship because of how upfront she was and how open she was. It made Kevin, any decision he made against her, it made him look like kind of crazy. Like, it made him look like, why would you do this? This girl is, you know, taking care of you and is obviously emotionally stable and, like, there for you. And, like, what are you doing? And now they're together and happy. She's in Canada all the time. loving life. So I think it's way more complicated than that he's just not that into you thing that people say. And that you should just like, block this guy on every single social channel that you can.
Yes.
Yeah.
I totally believe in that.
I agree. Probably better to cut ties. Mm-hmm. And I also agree Kevin and Astrid are phenomenal together. And
yeah.
Kevin was one of my closest buddies on Paradise, and I, and Kevin and Astrid are so awesome.
Yes, yeah. We love them.
We love
big
them.
Big fans of them. Yes.
Good luck, Ashley.
Yeah, good luck.
So next we have Suzanne. She says, hey, I love your podcast, not only because I am one of the many white girls who lives off of Bachelor Nation, but also because you guys talk about the real issues that are seen through the contestants and the events on the show. Since Becca's season, virginity has been a huge deal. There's definitely a difference of how big a deal it's been with Colton versus previous women who have been virgins. And I think you talked about that on your toxic masculinity bit in a prior episode. My question is basically, how does virginity impact relationships for women, specifically as they get older? I am almost 28 and I'm still a virgin because it's just never happened for me. I'm working on my PhD. Go you. Suzanne, mm-hmm. Dr. Suzanne, and I have obviously been preoccupied, but I am really wanting to find a partner now and feel like it's such a piece of baggage to most people, as we saw with people's reaction to Colton admitting he's a virgin. Hopefully this wasn't too off base for your podcast, and thanks for taking questions. Suzanne.
Ooh, Susie.
A lot.
I would say to Suzanne, with being an older virgin, you just have to own it.
Yep.
I think if you're going into dating presenting this as a handicap or even mm-hmm. just thinking of this as a deficit, that men are going to treat it as such.
Yeah.
I think being a virgin is not baggage, although mm-hmm. society might make you feel like you're baggage. But your virginity doesn't define you. It's just an aspect of it's one small aspect of you. And if a guy feels that it's baggage, then he's obviously not the mature enough man that you want to be with anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think more than anything, you just have to own it and just recognize that, like, you're on your own journey. And no one's to say, even though society says losing your virginity at 18 and 19 is normal, that's not to say that you're not on your own journey. And
right.
that 18 and 19, suddenly you're like a I don't know, like an old maid or
right,
something. Like,
right,
I don't even know.
Right. Your sale.
Yeah. I think you need to, I think personally, you would have to do some work on yourself to kind of accept it and mm-hmm. just own this aspect of you before you then go into dating and like introducing this to somebody else. Because if you don't own it yourself, then it's going to be troubling for you to then try to like, you know, have a conversation, like a meaningful conversation with a guy mm-hmm. you're dating about it. I also think the word virgin is very loaded with
yeah.
a lot of, like, connotations. You can be a virgin and you can still be a sexual being. Like, that doesn't...
Right.
I think there's this implication that you're just, like, this prude, you know, you have, like, a lock and key on your underwear. Like, whatever.
Chastity belt?
Yeah, like a chastity belt or something. I think, if like, presenting to guys that you're dating, like, instead of coining it, like, I'm a virgin, because I just feel like that is so loaded.
Yeah.
Even just phrasing it differently, like, I haven't had sex, or I haven't
right.
had sex yet.
Yeah.
And, you know, just explaining what your relationship to sex is, like, I haven't had sex, but I'm still open, or I've done
mm-hmm.
other things, or whatever, whatever. I think getting rid of that, like, virgin tag, I think will help you kind of, like...
It'll help, like, break
help
the ice.
Break
easier.
The ice, yes.
Yeah.
I'm trying to say break the ice with men a little bit differently. And then I think you're fine. But more than anything, I think you need to, like, own it first within yourself
mm-hmm.
Before even trying to, you know, tackle talking about it with random-ass guys that you date from online or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Any thoughts,
yeah,
John?
I totally agree with that, too. Definitely have to sort of own it first. And there's probably more tactful ways to bring it up in conversation at the right time. The other part, like, I think it's much more big a deal for the person who hasn't had sex than it actually is. Like, the other, I would think that most people don't really care that much if your partner has had sex before or not. It'd be nice for people to, like, have that experience, in my opinion, but I don't think it's a deal breaker.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, if you saw the way Becca reacted with Colton, she was like, okay, thank you for telling me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm glad that, like, if it's a really big deal to you, then I want you to be able to feel comfortable and talk about it with me. But that doesn't mean it's a big deal to me. And that's mm-hmm. how it was. So I don't think people actually care as much as you might think.
Yeah. Agreed. Mm-hmm. And I definitely think that it's a bit easier on women than it is for men.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think men are sexualized from a really early age.
Mm-hmm. That's why Colton being a virgin was like
extravagant. Such a big deal.
Yeah.
But also, I think you being worried about telling people, we all have aspects about ourselves that are unique but don't define us.
Mm-hmm.
So as someone who dates men, I haven't dated a man who's under the age of 35 in years. And I've dated people who were divorced. I've dated people who have had long-term relationships and then quit them. I've dated people with kids. And it none of those things are deal breakers for me. And I would see it as even a lesser version of those things. Like, if you can't find somebody who's kind of, like, open and flexible in that way, then they're just not for you. And sex is a really big deal in relationships, so I would, you know, say it sooner rather than later, and like Natasha said, to own it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's not something that defines you. And as someone who is younger but like prefers to date older guys and knows what comes with that, like mm-hmm. you just kind of like accept it about the person that you're dating, and it is what it is.
Yeah. True.
Yeah.
You'll find your person.
You'll find.
Genuinely will not give a shit.
Yeah, Dr. Suzanne. What, right. what you mean? You're Dr. Suzanne.
Right.
What?
You out here.
You're out here, girl.
Shit. Yeah.
And then we have our last question from an anonymous writer, listener, I should say. She says, I'm a 19-year-old Indian girl in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I'm completely inexperienced, like never been kissed inexperienced. This might be too broad of a question, but do you guys have any advice for young women of color who are just beginning to explore the dating scene?
Ooh.
I love this question.
What's your advice?
I love it.
I don't even know where to
start. If you're in college, Anonymous, I would say knock on people's doors and introduce yourself. This was really hard for me to do in college, but you just walk around and say hi to the girls on your floor.
She's an introvert. She's never going to do this.
I know.
Justine, I would never do that. Introverts do not do this.
I know. It's hard.
Sorry.
It's hard. She might be. Yeah, she might be. But the girls will introduce you to the guys. And if you really want to date and you're 19 years old, all you have to do is put on a dress and walk outside. Like, being 19 and dating, when I think about it, I'm like, oh my God, it was so easy. It was so easy to meet people. Oh my God, it was so easy to meet people who are on the same page as you as well. And I would not worry about your inexperience either. Quick story, because I think that everybody at the age of 19 has never done something.
Right.
Like, it's not like everybody is out here like at sex clubs and doing crazy shit when they're 19. And everybody might make you feel bad about not doing certain things, but it just is part of learning at that age. Quick story for me. I had two friends in college who made me feel horrible about not having anal sex. I was 19. They were like, you've never done anal?
Oh my God.
I can't believe you've never done it. I was like, what? I'm just 19. What do you guys mean? And Natasha and I was all girl school, so like, nah.
It's a no.
It's a no. So just my point in that story is don't let people make you feel bad about not being kissed. And just go out and put on a mini skirt, girl. You'll meet somebody.
Oh my God, just dude. I was not expecting that. John, do you want to go or I go?
I can't say whether or not to wear a miniskirt as a guy. I'd be like, probably more interested if I saw maybe like a sexier outfit on somebody. But I used to be really shy too, and part of it stemmed from being really overweight as a kid. And when you look, when you're chubbier, your face is chubbier and your cheeks are chubbier, so your eyes look squintier, so I look more Asian and was more embarrassed about that too.
Oh my god.
And like, I really like the idea of going out and meeting people, but if you're in college, there's so many ways to do that through extracurriculars and through like club sports or other like non-athletic clubs and organizations. So the hardest part is just getting that first sentence into a guy, and it can be as simple as like how'd you hear about this club, or what classes are you taking this semester? And once you have an in, if they're interested, it doesn't matter what you say, they'll continue the conversation and ask you about you, and then you're like, then you're there.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Can I ask you a question, Don? Do you feel as if, like, growing up, like, chubby, like, having your chubby days, did that shape you at all into, I guess, growing up into a more confident man or in some way? Did that have any, like, bearing?
I mean, it definitely made me, I know where I never want to be again. And that, like, I had low self-esteem, and I was embarrassed about being seen by girls, and I was embarrassed about, like, going to a beach or, like, going to, a party, and so, like, just from personal confidence, if you care that much about how you appear, then whatever you can do to just build up confidence will portray, will come out in how you portray to other people. So I would say, yeah, like, help me shape what I am now, because I know what I don't want to be.
Wow. Thanks for sharing. Who are we talking to? Anonymous.
Anonymous.
I had my first kiss when I was 20 years old. So, I'm right there with you, girl, being a late bloomer on all respects. I also dealt with, like, self-confidence issues. I also had a lot of social anxiety in college. That's why I was saying when Justine said go around and talk to everybody on the whole, I could never do that. I was going through my own stuff. So, I would say my advice is to have fun and stay in your lane. I think at 19, we have a tendency to just watch other people. I know I did that for sure. I was watching all these girls with guys and having fun, and they seemed way more advanced, and I just felt like I was left in the dust. And I'm now at 28. I've had a lot more dating experience than I would have thought I would have had at 20 with having my first kiss. And watching everybody, like, progressing. And I just feel like everyone's on their own journey. And I think at 19 in college, if you're watching everybody else around you, that might make you feel potentially worse about yourself. Because it's going to seem as if everyone's so experienced when everyone's going through their own mess. So I say have fun. You know, as John said, get involved in things that you like to do. And that's honestly the best way to meet guys. So whether it's clubs
guys or... Guys you have a connection with.
Clubs or just hobbies. Like, do what you like to do, and, like, you'll meet them within that vicinity. I don't think you have to worry about, like... You're not at our age yet where we're just sitting here hunting for husbands. you have time. You still can have fun with it. and so, just do what you love, and they're going to be there around anyways. Hang out with good people, good girlfriends. They have friends, they have brothers, they have cousins.
That's,
like,
what you got to do.
Just put yourself out there in that respect, but don't put too much pressure on yourself or watch other people too much, because that will drive you crazy.
That's great advice, especially for these kids now with Instagram. Could you imagine going to college with Instagram?
Oh, God, I can't. No. I know it's rough for them.
It sounds like a nightmare.
Right? That's crazy.
So limit your social media usage and have fun. And that's pretty much it.
That's it. So that's it for the mailbag.
I think that's it for the mailbag. Hopefully you guys, thank you everyone for writing in questions. There was some deep stuff there.
There was some good stuff there.
Thank you, John, for giving your mail expertise.
Loved it.
Appreciated that.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. This was fun.
Yes. We just want to say thank you, John, for coming onto the podcast. We've been huge fans of yours from the beginning. We've been rooting for you. We've just loved just your whole everything.
Yeah, seeing, like, you evolve. Like, beyond seeing a love story for you, seeing you go from, like, shy John to John who won the manly challenge on The Bachelorette, right? Yeah. You won the, like, axe wood chopping challenge. And then you were the pimp on Paradise. Like, seeing that evolve.
Your words, not mine.
And then we're all over Times Square. Like, right. We just love this story.
Yeah. Living your best life.
Yep.
We always are going to support that. So
yep.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
And shout out to John's social media. You could follow him at JohnGraham262. That's everywhere, right? Instagram and Twitter?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
And as always, guys, remember to rate, review, subscribe, follow us on all our Instagram, all the things, mm-hmm. Twitter, the number 2 BLK girls, the number 1 Rose. We're still tweeting mess, so go and follow us. Also on Instagram.
And you can email us at the number 2 black girls, the number 1 Rose at gmail.com.
Yes. We have merch. We have all kinds of fun stuff
all
coming for you.
All kinds of stuff going on.
Stay connected. We love you people. And yeah, we'll be back next time.
Yep. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.